Bhargavi and her parents took leave the next day. Manjagaura personally ensured that the bullock cart had been made secure this time and that the buttressing pin held fast to the axle. It was decided that the marriage would take place on 26th October. It was April-May, the late spring season of the year. I still had time to put things in place. Over the next 6 months, I saw the farm slowly take shape. I heeded many pieces of advice given to me in passing. One person gave me a gem. He said, "Be careful not to erode even an ounce of precious topsoil. It is the topsoil which is holding this world together." I was fortunate to receive advice from people who knew good farming techniques. I met all kinds of farmers, some good, some bad, some used ancient practices, some modern. I observed there existed a disconnect between low-expense, low-yield methods and high-expense, high-yield methods. I had reservations about the use of fertilizers. The use of machinery such as tillers, tractors and combine harvesters seemed too heavy-handed, whereas the traditional approach was gentler and more in tune with nature. The old-fashioned farmers seemed to be inspired in their farming methods by a sense of beregu. In traditional practice, farming is all about being in harmony with nature. That means the right season, right day, right time, right temperature, right humidity, and right soil conditions to plant the seed and harvest the crop. Farming was second nature to these farmers. They did it almost by instinct. Modern agriculture is about the conquest of nature. I was not in a position to decide between the two approaches. Both modern science and ancient wisdom tells us that topsoil is the most precious element in agriculture. I, therefore, opened up the topsoil very gently and cautiously, like a surgeon would a patient's skin. I put in place ridges and bunds to capture rainwater and to protect topsoil erosion. I planted a wide variety of crops, ranging from coriander and ragi to jowar and Bengal gram. Traditional farmers intuitively understood the nature of the soil, the nature of the weeds, which system of irrigation will work best, how much rainwater the plants absorb, and on the like. I continually observed them, talked to them, and learnt from them. I employed the products of modern technology too, by building a gobar gas plant, setting up dairy, poultry, and silkworm-rearing sheds. Soon, much like the other farmers, I got into debt. No matter what I did, I was unable to repay the loan. I knew something was going wrong somewhere. I had my share of problems with farming. If the seed was right, the sprouting wasn't. If the saplings rose fine, the water wasn't sufficient. There was too much rain or too little. One way or another, the vagaries of nature, or rather not understanding nature, or not being able to tune in perfectly, hit me hard. Beyond nature were the market forces. They too conspired to harm me. I got a good crop, but did not get a good price. I was getting deeper and deeper into debt. I did everything recommended by the government, agriculture, and horticulture departments, but things simply didn't seem to work. My struggle with farming lent my life a spiritual dimension. I sensed within me a sense of oneness with the environment. In one breath, I took in the mystic aura of the early morning sunrise, the sweet fragrance rising from freshly churned earth as I walked across the fields. I was in search of a natural method of understanding the crops, the seasons, and the soil. On the one hand, I was trying to be a conventional farmer. I sought to cultivate crops, sell the produce in the market, and get paid in order to repeat the cycle. I had the bank loan in mind too. However, this quotidian aspect of life did not keep me from being sensitive to the deep symbiosis of the forces of nature, the soil, the crops, and the cultivator. It was a great beginning, and all I knew was that I didn't know much about farming. There were problems. There were viral attacks, pests, and weeds. I planted bananas, an evergreen crop. I got the first crop, but the second was attacked and destroyed by virus. I learnt it the hard way that there is no medicine in the world to combat the banana virus. I was also able to get an insight into the debt cycle of farmers. It was a triple jackpot for the local money lender. He gave farmers seeds on credit and made money on the exchange value of seeds and also on the interest on the loan. He gave farmers fertilizers and pesticides on credit and made money on their worth plus the interest he charged the farmers. He bought the farmers' crop on mortgage, cheap and below the market price, and made money on that too. The moneylender made profits on all counts, even before a farmer brought his produce to the market. Conversely, the farmer got beaten at all the four points of sale: seeds, fertilizers, pesticides, and crops. As there was no market reference for their produce, they undersold a crop before it was due for the market. Most farmers, therefore, found themselves in debt. The moneylender deducted principal and the usurious interest, often leaving the farmer with nothing to take home. There was no way the farmer could get out of the vicious cycle of debt and usury. In addition to the cycle of usury, I grew to realize one curious, lesser-known little fact. The modern farmer inputs more than the output. The farm offered me lessons in natural history, and I imbibed them voraciously. There were millions of insects on the farm. I saw that when they died, their remains returned to the topsoil and replenished soil fertility. While the intensive use of fertilizer and pest control chemicals brought in relatively high yields in a short time frame, the techniques were doubly edged. Aggressive, intensive, deep trench tilling exposed soil to the elements of nature, resulting in erosion. The use of fertilizers and chemicals acted on the biotic activity of the topsoil. They too stripped the soil of its natural layer of nutrients. Artificial fertilizers also altered soil chemistry and rendered it sterile. I began realizing that farming was not just about phosphorus and nitrogen compounds or chemical pest and weed killers. These were the agents of interference that we had brought into play in our limited understanding. Farming was wholly about building and nurturing natural relationships. Modern science asked farmers to aggressively use chemicals at all stages of food crop production. It did not realize that by doing so, the soil was stripped of all its nutrients. The first crop might benefit from the artificially introduced nutrient, but after one crop, the soil did not sustain the yield unless greater quantities of chemicals were used. I saw that farmers were being asked to replenish the soil with artificial fungi and earthworms, vermiculture. What this overlooked was that earthworms are a part of the natural life of the soil. They don't need to be cultivated. It is like generating some oxygen for yourself at home, like polluting the city and then visiting an oxygen bar to get a whiff of life. We have taken it upon ourselves to regulate natural agents. Who or which agency prevented termite attack in the forests, for example? Forests sported the most luxuriant and wildest of growth and undergrowth, but one did not hear of disease afflicting a prime forest. A queen termite lays 15,000 to 20,000 eggs every day for more than 10 years. There is therefore no way their propagation can be prevented. Termites, like ants, are a force of nature. And why indeed should it be prevented? The termite is a part of the balance established by nature and effectively returns hardwood to the earth.